Stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live. But first, hi, I'm Pastor Bob Enyart with our Denver Bible Church update. The Apostle Paul wrote a letter to Timothy. Actually, he wrote two letters to Timothy. And the first one we call 1 Timothy. That makes sense, doesn't it? And in chapter 1, Paul deals with this issue of the law. And Christians, we debate everything and anything. Like how many angels could stand on the head of a pin. I don't know why they debated that. Or how many pins can you stick in the head of an angel? I don't know. We debate everything. But we do debate something somewhat serious, which is the law. And in this respect, are Christians supposed to live by the law, or do we live by grace? And think of it like this. If a man and a woman get married, they love each other, they get married, and then the man needs to stay faithful to his wife. So if she gets in his car and she pulls down the sun visor and she sees he wrote himself a note, and the note on the sun visor in his car said, "Remember, do not commit adultery." Now, how does that make his young bride feel? Really good? Oh, there's a woman in the studio audience. She just started to strangle her husband. It doesn't make her feel good. But if she saw that he wrote a note that said, "Remember, love your wife as Christ loved the church," that would make her feel good. If she has half a brain cell, it would make her feel great. So in 1 Timothy chapter 1, Paul wrote this. He wrote that we know that the law is good if you use it lawfully. Knowing this, oh, this is so cool. He's going to tell us how to use the law lawfully. Knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous person, but for the sinners, for murderers, for fornicators, sodomites, kidnappers, perjurers. That's who the law is for. He gives us this list. And so the law is used for the unbeliever to convict him of his sin and to bring him to Christ. But Paul says that the law is a tutor to bring us to Christ. But once we have Christ, we're no longer under the tutor. That's what he says in Galatians chapter 3. So in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says that the strength of sin is the law. That's pretty heavy duty. In Romans 7, he says that the law gives passion to our evil desires. Why would the law give passion to our evil desires? Because it's the forbidden fruit. It's the forbidden fruit. Grace works by love. And so you learn to love your wife, you learn to love God, and as you grow in love, in a loving relationship with God, you're better able to love your wife. And me being a guy, I always put it in terms of the guy in with his wife. You know, I don't say, "You gotta love your husband," because I'm a guy. I don't like saying that. But, you know, you wives could translate this. So anyway, you learn to love God, and then you're better, and then you love your wife, and you grow in that relationship. So it's not that you're faithful to her because you're reminding yourself every day, "I can't commit adultery. I can't commit adultery." That's not righteousness. The Bible says that the law cannot produce righteousness and that the law is not of faith. And whatever is not of faith cannot please God. God gave the law so that sin might abound, Paul wrote, and that sin might become exceedingly wicked, so that men would see how evil they are and they would repent. That some. Now, it's not that the law is bad. The law is just, holy, and good. But the law was given so that sin might become exceedingly sinful. That's an idea that a lot of Christians struggle with. It's confusing. It's not completely intuitive. But just try this. Tell kids that are playing in a room for an hour, and there's been a book on a table. They haven't even looked at it. Tell the kids, "Hey, kids, I'm going out of the room. That book, don't look at that book. Don't touch it. Don't even look at it, in fact. That book, don't look at it. I'll be back in an hour. Remember, don't look at that book." They'll be obsessed to look at the book. Now, stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. My phone number is, well, wait a minute. I've got a guest right here in the studio. That's more important than a phone number. Eric Nellis, how are you?
Good.
Eric, thanks for visiting. You, we lost you some months back to California, right? A member of Denver Bible Church. You went yet west, young man, and you came back with a wife. You did a great job.
Thank you.
Your wife's name is Olga. How'd you meet Olga?
I met her at church.
At church out in California.
Mm-hmm.
Where's she from?
Belarus.
Belarus. And so you guys are married how long now?
Just a little over a month.
All right. Well, Eric, I'm so excited for you, and you came back to visit us. And so I thought, hey, the best way to visit is on the air. So I asked you to come on in the studio and join me for a show. So, you know, feel free to chime in, whatever you'd like to do. In fact, you could steer the show if you want. I remember you take over things at times. But anyway, so what do you got? You brought a story?
Yeah, I brought this story from Drudge Report.
All right. Good source.
Yeah. You want me to go ahead and read it now?
Yeah. What is it? Go ahead.
All right. A Swiss nurse killed 24 old people in nursing homes and tried to snuff out three more lives in what he said was a bid to end their suffering and help reduce a crushing workload on staff.
Oh, my. Wait, now this is a nurse in Switzerland?
Yeah.
A Swiss nurse? Now, you haven't said yet, but this, what a despicable story, of course. But I'd like to, whenever we see stories like this, which tragically we see somewhat commonly, we always point out that it's virtually always a male nurse. It's virtually always. And in one case in Indiana where a nurse killed dozens of people, a male nurse, one of his relatives called into the show and said, Bob, I want to let you know you've pointed out how so often male homosexual nurses are mass murderers and kill a lot of people. This guy who killed all these people, he is a homosexual. So I'm sure your story is not going to tell us the sexual orientation of this guy, so we won't know. But I imagine it's a guy. Keep going. What happened?
Well, Swiss media have dubbed him the Angel of Death.
Oh, great.
So
the Angel of Death, which is a bit non-judgmental, you know?
Yeah, he's an angel.
Maybe he's doing God's work. Maybe he's doing God's work. Maybe he's not. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Officials in the central Swiss city of Lucerne said the unidentified suspect had confessed to several of the killings at five separate homes. The nurse, 34, told investigators he had put his victims, mostly women between the ages of 66 and 95, out of their misery by injecting them with lethal doses of drugs or smothering them with plastic bags and towels.
Oh, my. Could you, the hardness, the cruelty to stand over someone and smother them, that's the hard heart that people get, and they act like they're doing this person a favor. And they're killing the person. You in the medical community, you manage pain. If people are in pain, pain management is an important part of medicine, and you deal with that. But you don't kill them. That was the Hippocratic Oath starts out, first do no harm. Do no harm. All right. Do you have more there?
Yeah. The accused gave us his motive, acting out of sympathy, compassion, empathy, and salvation on the one hand, and also cited total overload and relief for himself and the nursing team on the other hand.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So this is, this happens so often throughout history with euthanasia. This happens where it starts out, people talk about the quality of life, and we're concerned about this person who's suffering. And that's where they start out with. But very quickly, it moves to something else. It moves to, well, if it's okay to kill people who are not dying, it's okay to kill them. Well, there might be other good reasons to kill them. Like we might be able to free up a spare bed in a hospital or a nursing home. Or we might be able to do less work. I don't have to clean up after the old woman. And that's so he actually admitted part of it was selfishness. He didn't like having to work hard.
Makes his job easier.
You know what, Eric? That makes me think of April 3rd. April 3rd, that story right there makes me think of April 3rd, 1940. Now, that date probably doesn't ring a bell to many people, but could you hold on here a second? I want to ask Al. Do you know who Al is? I wonder if Olga knows who Al is, your wife. Al is my co-host computer. Olga's out in our studio audience out there with a handful of ladies tonight in the studio audience. That's different. Okay, here, I'm pulling up, and I've got something on my computer, on Al's brain here, Al the Fifth, and it's the minutes from a meeting in Germany on April 3rd, 1940, and it was a conference of mayors. They met in Berlin. And we've got these minutes of the meeting. Because once the wall came down in the Berlin Wall, when the wall came down and the Soviet Union fell apart, there have been millions of pages of documentation that that researchers have been pouring through since the early 90s. And here's a book that was written in 1994 that I've got excerpts from, called Cleansing the Fatherland. It's all documentation about what the Nazis were doing. And not only Nazis, but just normal Germans who were in government when the Nazis took power. And so on that day, 1940, all the major mayors in Germany, they met for a conference in Berlin, and the mayor of Munich presided. Now, that guy's name was Karl Fiehler. Fiehler. And I'd like to go through these minutes with you. Not all of them, but you could feel free to interject if you'd like. But he was, this Karl Fiehler, was informing all the mayors in Germany of a plan they had to empty hospital beds. Now, they're going to empty hospital beds, and you want to guess? What do you think their plan was? How might they empty the hospital beds?
Start with the oldest, kill them?
Yeah, they're going to kill them. Now, this is a good plan in Germany, right? Because they had disabled people, and they had the elderly, physically handicapped, mentally handicapped. They had a plan to kill them. When we come back from this break, I want to read from you the minutes, and it'll blow you away.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
Bob Inyart here with a live commercial break. I want to tell you about our Turkey tour. Every couple of years, we go to a different Bible country. We've been to Israel a few times, Italy. And now, May 25th, we're planning to go to Turkey. And our goal is to bring 20 people from Denver Bible Church, Bob Inyart Live, and our dear friends, Art and Alice Risley, they've been to 100 countries all over the world, some of them four or five times. And they've gone with us to to Israel on a couple of occasions, and Art has been telling me for 10 years, Bob, the best tour guide in the world is Bora from Turkey. Bora knows Turkey. He's been doing it for 30 years. He's soon to retire, and we should take a trip to Turkey. And Turkey is so, it's so central to the story of the Bible. So much of what happens in the Bible occurred in the land that today we call Turkey. So I want to let you know that we'll be heading out for 17 days, 15 nights, and it'll be, the price of the tour is $3,590 per person. Call us and give us your phone number and your email if you're interested in going. Call us at 800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. All right, we're back, and I'm here with Eric Nellis, the newlywed, just over a month.
That's right.
That's great. Do you recommend marriage to the single guys who are out there considering it?
Yes.
Is it good?
Uh-huh.
It is?
Very good.
All right. Yeah, I'm addicted to marriage. I like marriage. It's just, I was made to be married, and that's all there is to it. It's just so wonderful. Wait till you have kids. That'll really blow your mind. Kids are so extraordinarily wonderful. It's just God has given us the most awesome gifts of being able to have relationships and then procreate and bring new human beings into the world. It's so great. Well, at any rate, back to this terrible story, Eric. On April 3rd, 1940, this conference of mayors met in Berlin, and the mayor of Munich presided. His name was Karl Feiler. And they had a plan to empty hospital beds. And how are you going to do that? By killing patients. That's what they were going to do. And they announced it to all these mayors, a couple hundred mayors. And there was a big protest. Do you think there was a big protest? You think the mayor said, this is wrong. We won't stand for this. We're socialists. Socialists believe in equality. What do you think?
No protest.
No protest? Well, that's, how could you say that? Aren't they decent human beings? You're right. No protest. And these people are not hand-picked Nazis. They're just government bureaucrats. They were people, they were mayors. And so they decided they were going to kill patients in hospitals to make space for those who were more worthy of the beds. And each mayor had a responsibility in this, and I'll tell you what the job, what the mayor's job was. Their job wasn't to kill the patients. That was going to be done by the hospital staff. The medical community had been instructed of that. They had to deal with the remains, because normally municipalities deal with, you know, things like disposing human bodies. And so each mayor was told that they would have to deal with the bodily remains of these hospital patients who were killed. And the plan was, initially, it was they were going to kill the mentally and physically handicapped. And they did. Over the next 5 years, town cemeteries took delivery of the remains of tens of thousands of patients. And they were Germans, not Jews, because they didn't feel, initially, they didn't think the Jews were good enough for this kind of treatment. They started by killing Germans and through euthanasia. And this is what they did. They cremated the people that were killed and put the remains in urns. And they sent the urns to the towns that the person had lived in. And the mayors were instructed to treat the urns in a certain way. So let's go to the minutes from the meeting, and I'll quote verbatim, right? But your first guess was right. They didn't protest. Okay, so this is Karl Feiler, the mayor of Munich, presiding. April 3rd, 1940, the Conference of Mayors in Berlin, Germany. Quote, "In the many mental institutions in the Reich, there are an infinite number of incurably ill patients of all kinds who are completely useless to humanity. In fact, they are nothing but a burden. Their care creates endless expense, and there is no possibility that these people will ever become healthy or useful members of human society. They vegetate like animals and are antisocial people unworthy of living." Isn't that something? You know, that reminds me a bit of Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. Do you remember what she said along those lines?
People are weeds.
Yeah, right. And she said that the blind, and she wrote two books, Pivot of Civilization and Woman in the New Race. And Margaret Sanger, who's the founder and she was the president of Planned Parenthood for decades, she wrote, she listed handicapped people that are in hospitals in New York. She's talking about New York State. And she listed the blind, the deaf, the dumb, the mute, and the lame, the dead weight of human waste. That's what she called handicapped people. And Planned Parenthood to this day gives out their Margaret Sanger Award. It's just despicable. What liberals, pro-aborts, pro-choice, Democrats, people who, they honor Margaret Sanger as a hero. And she was like a Nazi. In fact, she hired a Nazi to write for her newsletter. She hired, I think, Dr. Ernst Rudin, one of Hitler's eugenic scientists. I use the term scientist loosely. But anyway, let me continue with the minutes to the mayor's meeting in Berlin on, you remember the date?
April 3rd.
Yeah. What year?
1940.
Yes, very good. April 3rd. It's almost like we should remember that date. I've always felt that since I read this about 10 years ago almost. April 3rd, 1940. I'll continue with the minutes. "They only take nourishment away from other healthy people and often need 2 to 3 times as much care. Other people must be protected from these people." Imagine that. "We must eliminate these beings, even if only to better maintain curable patients in mental hospitals. It is difficult, above all, because of..." Now, he's going to give 2 reasons why this program might be difficult. Who might oppose it? Could you guess? I know you haven't read this, right? Can you guess who might this mayor of Munich think might oppose this program to kill all these patients?
Some pastors.
Some pastors? And who's the second group? Your first guess is right.
Maybe foreign, some other countries, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Could you narrow it down?
The United States.
Right. Both guesses. Eric, that's why we like Eric around. That's perfect. Let me read it for you. He said, here, Karl Feiler, the president, the mayor of Munich, presiding in Berlin in this conference of mayors, said, "It is difficult above all because of the church." Right? You said pastors. "It is also dangerous because of the Americans, who could enter the war against us for just such a reason." Well, they knew that, right? They knew that, only our leadership was not as insightful and strong as it should have been at the time. So he was talking then about the remains. I'm going to skip ahead a bit. And he said that they have to inform family members that the urn, when family members ask about their loved one who's now dead, if family members ask about the remains, they have to inform them that the urn will be sent to the nearest cemetery office free of charge for temporary storage. Now, but it doesn't end there. When such urns are sent to the cemetery offices, the cemetery office must keep no files on them. Now, why would that be? You know, this reminds me of Hitler's own personal physician did a report on euthanasia. I don't know. Have you heard this? It's in the same book, Cleansing the Fatherland. Fabulous. Just an absolutely fabulous book by Götz Ali. And it was published by John Hopkins University Press in 1994. But Hitler's, you mind me telling you these stories, Eric?
It's good.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It's very interesting.
Hitler's physician, his personal physician, was in charge of a hospital, an asylum for, you know, mentally ill people or physically handicapped people. I forget which. And he was an advocate. He thought it would be good to kill these people. But he couldn't just do that as a bureaucrat. So he devised a survey. And he sent the survey out to a couple hundred families whose relatives were in his facility. And he asked them about, since your son or daughter or whatever, grandchild, is incurable and suffers, we would like to know your opinion on, and he asked about euthanasia, about terminating their life, using drugs to end their suffering and terminate their life. And so in many people responded. And the response that he was surprised to get, that he didn't expect he would get, was this. People were angry at him for asking. And they said, you know what to do. Why didn't you just do it without asking us? That was a theme that he got back in response in a significant percentage. And so they actually implemented a program throughout Germany based on that advice. And here's what they did. Aside from the people they started killing, because they eventually killed way over 100,000 people, I think approaching 200,000 people they killed, Germans. And what they did was they took people who were long-term institutionalized, and they systematically moved them. They moved them from one institution to another, and they would keep them there for a month. And if no family member checked on them, they'd move them one more time and kill them at the third institution. They built gas chambers to kill their patients. That's where the gas chambers in Germany started. It started in the hospitals, and the doctors were the ones. You needed two doctors to sign to terminate someone. It sort of reminds me of what's going on in Israel now with abortion. The law there in Israel, you need, I think you need two judges to sign to grant an abortion in Israel. And that's so reminiscent of what the Nazis did. In fact, one case, one kid, I think he was in a home for, I forget, I'm going back almost 10 years when I read this book. But I think he was in a home, maybe either a juvenile delinquent or a home for the physically handicapped. I forget which. And they had this form that they would use to evaluate whether or not to kill someone, to terminate a patient, to gas them. And the reason they put for this kid, he was a young kid, he was maybe about 9 years old or so, they put bedwetter. Bedwetter. And because he was a bedwetter, that was the reason two doctors signed to kill him, and they killed him. Bob Enyard here. Now, for the next 45 seconds, I'm talking just to those tuning in on the web via kgov.com while our friends in Denver listen to one of our Denver advertisers. But, hey, guys, I want to thank you so much for helping out in September to keep Bob Enyard Live on the web for another year. And when February comes, we're almost at February. Each February, we do a fundraiser for Bob and Yurt Live, the radio show, to try to raise support to help us stay on the air in Denver for the next year. And so if you listen on the web and you've given to keep us on KGov.com, thank you so much. And now we'll be in February, we'll be focusing on, we won't take a lot of time, but some time to raise money to keep Bob and Yurt Live on the air in Denver. And to our Denver audience, this is our home base here in Denver. And so this is Bob and Yurt with a live commercial break, thanking you guys for tuning in here at KGov.com. Well, on the web, we're at KGov.com. You can hear archive shows. And on the air, we're at KLTT, 670 AM. Well, in May, beginning May 25th, we're going on a tour to Turkey, and I would be thrilled if you could come along. Now, we believe the tour will work like this. A tour bus sits 50 people, the real nice luxurious ones, 54 people. But we're planning on 20 people in our group, and we'll join another group of 10 people. But we'll be sort of, you know, our own group. And we'll be on the same bus with another group. And as we go through Turkey, we will be looking at sites that are just extraordinary for their perspective from the Bible. For example, the seven churches that Jesus wrote letters to, like Pergamum, Thyatira, Ephesus, Smyrna, Sardis, Philadelphia, Laodicea, they're in Turkey. Did you know that? And Paul's journeys. Hey, we're going to have a good time, so think about it. Call us to get more info. We're back, Bob and Yurt Live, and Eric Nellis is in studio. So, Eric, and I want you to feel free. You know, I'm reading the minutes to the meeting here, but you could feel free to interject. But that's Hitler's own, his personal physician. I don't know if that's what especially qualified him, right, to work for Hitler. But he did that survey. And they actually implemented his findings. And when family members, when they moved a patient, oftentimes no one made any inquiry at all. And they knew we could kill this one quickly. And then if they moved a patient and family members came and said, where is my grandfather? Where's my mother? Where's my wife, my kid, whatever? And then they'd say, oh, okay, well, let's see, where is he? And they'd say, oh, we moved them over here. So it was inconvenient. They'd have to maybe try to go there. And if they did go there, they'd leave them there for a few months. And the family member would visit there. It'd probably be inconvenient. Then they move them again. And then if the family member showed up at the third institution, then they'd leave them there and move them again. And they would try to get the family members to give up. And the sooner the family members gave up, that's the order in which they killed. They emptied out all their mental institutions, their asylums, their homes for juvenile delinquents. They killed over 100,000 Germans, and including that young boy. And the reason giving, and the Germans documented, you know, they were real bureaucrats. They documented everything. We've got the two doctor's signatures on the original form, and the reason for termination was given as bedwetter. And that's where it goes to. Like this nurse. How old is this nurse?
34.
34, and he's killed 24 people in Switzerland. It's a male nurse, which is so common. You know, women's hearts could get very hard too, but it takes a little longer culturally. Men's hearts harden a bit before the women. But the women will follow. But, all right, let me get back to this now, this here, these minutes to the meeting. And then I think you could see why they say the remains inform family members that the urn that carries the cremated remains, the ashes will be sent to the nearest cemetery office free of charge for temporary storage. Right? They're giving them a benefit, and they don't want the family members to get upset or to look into this. They just want it to be very smooth. When such urns are sent to the cemetery offices, the office must keep no files on them. Now, that's interesting about why. You know, I guess one reason is that they didn't want people researching this, looking into it, investigating, being able to find out what happened. I've got three family members that ended up here in the past 8 months, and here they are. Here are their name plaques. Here are the dates that you received them. What's going on? Why are you killing my family members? They didn't want that. I think that's one reason. But, you know, eventually, testimony at the Nuremberg trials, a Dr. Richard Schaefer testified in Nuremberg that it was tens of thousands of urns in the country, in Germany, that were processed in this manner. Tens of thousands. And the minutes of the meeting go on. They said the practical procedure at the cemetery should occur as follows. One fine day, a package will arrive at the cemetery. That's how the meeting, that's how the minutes read. One fine day, of course, this is in German, so it's translated into English. But one fine day, a package will arrive. That's how cavalier people can become about grisly deeds, even being an accomplice to murder. One fine day, a package will arrive. And, you know, some people imagine that of the 6 million Jews who were killed, and here we know over 100,000 Germans and all the others who were killed because of Nazi wickedness, brutality, people think that Hitler did it all. You know, like one guy went around and killed everybody. But how many people does it take to run camps and kill 6 million Jews? How many camps were there? There were hundreds. I think there was over 1,000 camps. So who ran those camps? Who did all the killing? And it turns out, you know, were these mayors all handpicked by the Nazis? Did they go around in 1938 and say, well, are you willing to kill all the people in your hospitals? If so, we'd like you to be mayor. They didn't do that. Some of these people were mayors before the Nazis took power. And let's see here. I'm looking through here. They, not only the mayors, but how about all the asylum directors and the homes for handicapped and disabled children? There were thousands of directors, doctors, and nurses that knew about the slaughter of their patients. Were they all handpicked by the Nazis? They all became doctors since 1938 to 1940? No. So these were men and women in good standing in the medical community, and they convinced themselves that it was a good idea to kill all these people. And of a couple hundred directors, they called them asylums, I think, even if it was not for mental institutions. But of the hundreds of asylums, if I got that right, only one is known to have resisted. Only one. And he wrote a letter to his boss on August 6th, 1940. Now, that meeting was April 3rd. So this is 4 months later. 4 months and 3 days later. Now, he's not a mayor. He wasn't at that meeting, but he's at one of the asylums, and he's been told, okay, you got to start killing your patients. And his name was Heinrich Hermann, and he managed a home for deaf mutes near Ravensburg. And they call it an asylum, so that's why I think German into English, I guess we'd use that terminology for other kinds of hospitals. And we have a letter that he wrote to his boss dated August 6th, 1940. And I wish that Heinrich Hermann, I wish his name could be remembered by people because he was a hero. Here's what he wrote. He wrote, I know the aim of this planned registration. I am simply convinced that the authorities are doing wrong by killing certain patients. By exterminating such a patient or a member of the family or the asylum who is simply abnormal, we are acting against God's will. Isn't that neat?
Wow.
Yeah, and it had to take courage, huh? With Hitler as the chancellor, the Führer. That is the reason I cannot go along with this. I am sorry, but we must obey God more than human beings. I am prepared to accept the consequences of my disobedience.
Wow.
That guy's a hero. He's my hero. That guy, Hermann, Heinrich Hermann, was a German who was a hero. And he was a director of a home for deaf mutes near Ravensburg. And what, did the Nazis handpick him? No, he was in the medical community. He had a career. These were all bureaucrats and doctors and mayors. That was it. He was just there, as thousands of other Germans were just there. And when the government came along and a sufficiently evil party took power, they thought, hey, you know what? We'd like to kill a lot of people. And all the bureaucrats said, okay, how can we help? That's what they did. That's what bureaucrats do. And if the government is righteous, then the bureaucrats, sort of to go along in the path of least resistance, they generally will do right. Because a judge is told, here's the good law, and you better enforce it and enforce it right. And they generally will, even if they're evil. Even Pontius Pilate was going to acquit Jesus Christ. But it was the jury, the majority, that crucified him. And Pilate was guilty too. But at the bottom of the minutes of the April 3rd mayor's meeting, at the bottom it says, questions should be addressed to Herr Deputy Dr. George Schluter at the National Association of Mayors in Berlin. Now, by the way, he was the mayor's their head for social policy. And you know what's interesting? He wasn't handpicked by the Nazis. He had been around for a long time. He was a mayor way back during the days of the Weimar Republic, the Democratic Weimar Republic. And he was just the mayor. And when a new political party comes to town, you know, comes to power, they don't change all the mayors and all the dog collectors and all the doctors. They just, hey, he was the mayor and the Nazis take over and he stayed a mayor. So it's just so despicable. So, Eric, did you know, here you are, a happily married man. Did you know that newlywed, that story was going to trigger this in my memory? You didn't know that.
No.
We're going to take a break. We'll take a break. When we come back, could you finish that story you started with?
Yeah.
All right. All right, Bob Enyard here. Now, we've taken some trips with, Denver Bible Church, Bob Enyard Live, with friends and family, friends of the show. We have taken some awesome trips. Every time we've gone somewhere, I think the consensus is overwhelmingly people have been ecstatic. We went to New Zealand to visit Bill Clinton. He went down there. We had to say hello. That was a great trip. We actually went to protest Bill Clinton. We've gone to Italy with dear friends of the show, Rome, Venice, Florence. We've gone to Israel 3 times, each time with a group of people from the program. And now this will be our first trip to Turkey. And Turkey is just so significant. Well, we've gone to Israel and we eventually made 2 videos, Mount Moriah, the evidence for the resurrection. And that video came directly out of our trips to Israel. And then our 3rd trip, we made a video called A Bible Tour of Israel. And when you go to these lands of the Bible, you really get a better handle on the story of the Bible. It doesn't necessarily help you understand the meaning better, but the story contains the meaning. And when you understand the story of the Bible, then the meaning is, it's more intuitive because the meaning is conveyed through the story. And the story, it occurs on a set, in a setting. And in this case, the Bible story occurs in the Middle East. So Paul takes his crucial missionary journeys, which launch the body of Christ. And Jesus Christ in the book of Revelation, and that happens, so much of that happens in Turkey. And so we're going to go to these biblical cities, but we'll also go to modern cities like Istanbul, for example, and we'll get some of the culture and history and the food of Turkey, which I hear is fabulous. But we'll see, we'll learn about some of Paul's journeys and the churches Christ wrote to. So call us for information, 800-8-NYART. Give us your phone number and your email ID if you have one, 800-836-9278. All right, we're back, and I have Eric Nellis in the studio. And Eric, thank you for letting me ambush you and just say, come on in the studio and do the show.
Of course.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought this story. And these, what the Germans did, you know, I prefer to say the Germans rather than the Nazis. Because for the most part, the whole country went along with it. And we think like it was only Hitler. Hitler and a few of his inner circle. How many did Hitler actually kill with his own hands? Do you know of any? I don't know that he killed one person. I don't know. He may have. I don't recall. But he didn't kill millions. That was the German people did that. And whether they were Nazis or not. You know, when Hitler won in 1938, I think that was the year. Maybe it was in 36. But between the Nazis and the communists, the Marxist communists, the worst of the communists, they won an absolute majority between those two parties. You know, Bill Clinton won with, did he win a majority of the vote in that when he beat Bush?
No,
right? He won a plurality. Well, Adolf Hitler got about the same percentage of the vote that Bill Clinton became president with, about the same. And then when he was chancellor and he strong-armed people politically, and he became the Führer and an effective dictator. But a majority of Germans voted for the Nazis and the Marxists. A majority. And the Nazis got more than any other party, so Hitler won. It's just despicable. And not long before that, you know, Germany introduced a democratic constitution, and they became the Weimar Republic, a democratic Weimar Republic, so that the people can choose the direction of the country. And there are so many conservative Christians who think democracy is the answer to happiness on earth. Democracy. What do you, Eric, you've been out of state for a while. What do you think about that? Democracy, majority rules, is that really the answer for the Middle East, for Iraq? No?
Mm-mm.
Why not? That's radical to say no.
All you have to do is sway a majority towards evil if you convince the majority that they're not as rich as the top 10%, then why not have the top 10% give all of their money to everybody else? That seems fair, because it's easy enough to get people to vote that way, because...
Right. Yeah, the majority, the rich are never the majority, right? The middle class is always the majority. So the middle class say, we want more money and we want health care, so we're going to raise the taxes on the rich. We're going to take their money and use it to pay for my kids, you know, dental work or whatever, whatever you could get out of them. Yeah, it's Jesus said the majority are evil. So majority rules sounds like a bad idea. But anyway, back to your story. I interrupt it. That was the longest interruption I've ever done.
Oh, that's okay, Bob.
All right, thank you.
Let's see. The last last part that I had read was just that the nurse had done this out of a motive, acting out of sympathy, compassion, empathy, and salvation on the one hand, and also cited total overload and relief for himself and the nursing team on the other.
That's the part that got me into this whole mayors of Germany thing.
Yeah.
Because he killed some people because he felt he was overworked. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to be nice to his coworkers. They shouldn't have to feed this person. They're feeding too many people.
And the story and
they're getting paid for it, right?
Of course.
Is he doing this for free?
No.
No, he's getting paid for it, no less. I bet he works less hours, or worked, now he's in jail. I bet he worked less hours than I do.
I'm sure he did.
Would you think?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But he was overworked.
Right. All right, go ahead.
A psychiatric review found the nurse competent to stand trial, which was expected to take place late this year or early next. Mm. The case has shocked Switzerland despite its relatively lenient attitude to euthanasia.
Yeah, right. Switzerland, what's with Northern Europe? They are so messed up. They seem to be on the cutting edge of legalizing killing people, lonely elderly people, killing them. They're on the cutting edge of not only homosexuality, but even pedophilia, sex with kids, and especially homosexual sex with children. They're on the cutting edge. They're always pushing that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of Americans that aspire to be more like Western Europe and Northern Europe. And
right. Denmark, Norway, Switzerland. What's with them? They're just sick. And what is with it? Cultures are different, and there's an ebb and flow of moral and ethical issues and religious ideas, philosophical ideas. And cultures don't all respond the same way to the same stimulus or opportunities. There are differences. And, for example, I think the Bible shows us that the more righteous a country potentially is, the more they know God. When they turn away from God, the more wicked they become, generally. And that could explain why America is exporting immorality, perversion, filth, abortion, atheism all over the world, the best it can through Hollywood and others. But could you do a little more? I'm fascinated. I see you don't have too much more there.
This just continues. This kind of goes back, I guess, to whenever they begin to find out the problem with this nurse. It says the 9 suspicious deaths first came to light at the end of May 2001 after a rash of people died in a special unit for the senile in a home for the elderly in Lucerne, where the man had worked since December 2000. Mm. The suspect, whom authorities have described as well-educated, was arrested after the home's authorities alerted police.
So he had been there for 5 months, and then 9 people died in one unit.
Mm-hmm.
And so the folks working there called the police. Now, if this was Germany, the police would have said, "What are you bothering us for? That's part of the program." But if it was Germany in 1940.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
It says he remains in custody. Investigators widened their probe to include other homes and hospitals where the man had worked, poring over every death. 5 bodies were exhumed as part of the investigation. Euthanasia is tolerated in a number of Swiss cantons or provinces, mm-hmm. Provided strict rules are followed. Active euthanasia is outlawed in Switzerland, but the country does not regard it as a crime if a doctor assists in suicides by prescribing lethal drugs that patients close to a painful death take mm-hmm. themselves to end their suffering.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Wow. Well, thanks for brightening up my day with that story, Eric. That's a terrible story. That is just horrifying. But, I'm glad that gave me the opportunity to go through these notes, because I don't know if maybe twice on the air or Maybe three times in 10 years I've gone through those minutes on the air. So once every 3 years. But I don't think I've done it in 4 years, probably. Maybe 5 years. So, and people need to learn. You know, the adage, what if you don't learn anything from history, how do they go?
History will repeat itself.
Yeah, you're bound to repeat it. And the only thing men learn from history, the only thing is that men learn nothing from history. And when we think of the Nazis and what an example of wickedness Nazi Germany was in just the 1900s. It's not like you're going to the Middle Ages. And what does our culture know about the laws of the National Socialists? Our culture, they don't even know what Nazi means, right? N-A-Z-I, National Socialist. That's what Nazi stands for. They don't know that the Nazis were socialists. They don't know what the laws were. They just don't know. They don't know that they advocated euthanasia. And so many of the laws that the Nazis had were so similar to liberal initiatives today, like gun control. The Nazis had a gun control law. Have you ever heard about the comparison to our first gun control law in America? It was verbatim the Nazi law. We took the Nazi law, translated it into English, some gun control advocates, and that was our gun control law. That's how we got started. And, of course, the Nazis wanted to collect all the guns. Evil governments always do. Isn't that something? So I get discouraged that even conservative Christians generally don't know. Like, it's like we haven't bothered to study or to remember what went wrong. In the middle of World War II, I'm just sort of reminiscing now, the Nazis released a movie, a made-for-theaters movie, and it premiered in Milan, in Italy. They were the Axis, the Allies. And no, they were the Axis, the bad guys. And my background, nationality, Eric, do you know what I am? Somebody in the studio audience just yelled Italian. Yeah, that's right. Half German, somebody else said. Italian, German, and Dutch, and a little French. But no, not French. Get that out of there. But mostly Italian and Dutch and German. And so in World War II, I was on the wrong side of the war. Of course, I wasn't born then. But my ancestors would have been, although they lived here in this country by then. But anyway, but I like us to remember that this was the Germans who did this, and they were not genetically different than people who are alive today. They weren't genetically different, right? They're human beings. And things that the Nazis did are things human beings have done since there have been human beings. And you have a few bad laws, and the government becomes terribly wicked, and people do the most vile things. That's why Bob and Your Live is here. Eric, thank you for joining us. We wish you and your wife the absolute best of a marriage and a family. God bless you guys. We're so excited for you. Thank you, Eric. And we're about out of time. So, hey, let me let you know, February 28th, I've been invited to do a debate in Denver. You could come on out and see it. It's a Saturday. On the age of the earth. Is the earth old, billions of years, or young, thousands of years? In fact, we've got a month coming up. Maybe we could work on it together. You could email me some of your arguments. Hey, this is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.